six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. It's episode 5 around the table. James O'Toole, former Pats manager, Harry Kenny, and of course, a Hall of Famer with Shamrock Rovers as well. We'll come on to that as well, Harry. Paul Corry could have been a Hall of Famer at Shamrock Rovers.
Could have been, yeah, maybe. Unfortunately not.
And Anthony Pine from RT Online. Let's get straight down to it, the hits and misses of the week. And James, we just have to start with your hit of the week. It's a double hit, really.
Yeah, double hit. Two absolutely cracking goals in the RSC on Friday night for Waterford. One just before half-time and one right at the death of the game to win it from Sam Bowen and Shane Griffin. Two absolutely smashing goals. Two wonderfully well-taken hits. And as I said to you earlier, I don't like people saying that goalkeepers have no chance, but literally Peter Cherry couldn't have really done much about them. They were both nestled in the top corner. The crowd went absolutely crazy in the 94th minute when Griffin's, a local lad coming on as a sub, scores the winning goal. His first senior goal is absolutely smashing.
Did you see them, Harry?
I did see them, yeah. They were excellent goals. They're going quite well, actually, Waterford. And, yeah, great goals, really good goals, especially following on from the Dundalk goal up in Talla.
That's right.
So, yeah, terrific.
Because, Anthony, you were making the point that so many people right around the world, millions, what, yeah, 5 or 6 million, maybe more?
Millions,
up to
yeah,
10 million now?
Views? We estimate around 7 to 8 minutes. Actually, quite kind of hard to gauge it because it was tweeted out 3 times and then there's Facebook and there's Instagram. But, you know, Shane Griffin's goal of the weekend, I think, has about 10,000 Twitter views, so it didn't get quite the same traction. But every weekend, the league produces a moment of magic. You know, there's just very good players in the league. Jordan Flores is just something special, yeah. You know, so, and it took off then, you know, kind of internationally as well, and that's why it just got this enormous.
Well, in fairness to Shane's, when it did get the world's best League of Ireland fan ever to retweet it as well, which is
wow,
Martina Navratilova, who got in on this one. So I don't
that's
know
what she said.
I think
wow,
she was there on Wednesday or on Friday night. Actually, I didn't see her.
Well,
but
so were you, weren't you?
Yeah,
you were
yeah,
there.
I was there. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
What about Derry?
Derry would be one of my misses of the week, it has to be said. They were really, really, really poor. Shockingly poor. I haven't seen the Derry team play that bad since.
It's been a strange old start.
Yeah, it has. And it's once again, and Tim Nielsen, bless him, he came off the pitch. When he subbed off, he nearly broke the dugout. He hit it so hard. He was wow, that frustrated about coming off. And Kevin Deary had words with him about his reaction to coming off, but you can see he's going to be a quality striker, but he can't be a quality striker if he doesn't get the ball. Or the ball is played 20 feet above him or 20 feet away from him or anything like that. And to tell you how well Waterford dealt with him, as I said to you, Graham Cummins played centre-half for Waterford.
Back, yeah, he's been playing there for them. And he signed as a centre-forward. I believe he's doing really well there.
It was really like, but I can't tell you if he played really well on Friday night because he was up against nothing.
Right.
So he played really. The last time I can remember him ever playing centre half was a Cove.
Yeah.
So they've unearthed another centre half there. So.
Well, and I believe it was his request that he actually wanted to play centre half. That signing for Waterford, he wanted to change back to being a centre half, and that's the position he wanted to play.
That's.
Yeah, and is that because he's getting on perhaps a bit
in sign
years?
The legs going a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he did struggle at Shamrock Rovers, and I think he'd probably be the first person to tell you that. And he hasn't probably got that power, that change of pace that he did in his younger years. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's just.
Does that happen too often then that players make the transition from striker to defender? I'm thinking of Gary Doherty was did that for years.
He kept on flitting between the two.
Yeah, he did.
I guess maybe as a striker, if you have a career as a striker, then you can read. You can almost
Stephen Ward as well. Ward was Stephen.
It can help you read.
He did that when he was much younger, though,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I don't think it happens too often these days.
I suppose if he's got Shane Griffin in front of him scoring goals like that, mind. Well, let's stay a centre half.
As we mentioned, you were there, so let's hear from Shane Griffin because James has been chatting to him about that goal and about Waterford's win.
Words can't describe it, to be honest. Like, delighted. Most important thing is we get the win, but I'm delighted. I scored. Happy skipping first as well, so yeah.
It's dropping off into that little pocket where you found yourself some space as well. It's showing maturity above your ears, really.
Yeah, no, I see when the ball was coming in, I thought I might get a chance, I might get flicked out off Mikey's shot, and kind of spun at me quick and got a nice touch at my feet and just smashed it. So
two absolutely wonderful goals. By you, yeah. It's nice. Sam's one as well.
Yeah, he just said it's been changing. He's like, you have to take the spotlight off me there. I was like, he still has a lovely strike from him as well, but nah, I mean, it's the most important thing is to win.
Well, there you go. That's Shane Griffin when it was tweeted out by Watford originally on Friday night. I was thinking, Shane Griffin, I thought he had signed for St. Pat's.
Yeah.
It was like two Shane Griffins both on the pitch at the same.
Yeah.
No, but it was a great guy. He's only stepped up. He was on their under-19s as well. He's a local lad. He stepped up. There was a bit of a buzz when he was announced as well as coming on. Like, you could feel it. They've had a couple of players like that over the years at Watford as well, where the young lads have come up and the crowd really get behind these young lads. It reminds me of the likes of Finn Harps bringing on a young lad, or Derry bringing on young lads. The people know because they're from the community, and what a great way to make sure your name is in the papers the next day.
Harry, it's still very early in the season, but you mentioned there a few moments ago that you've been impressed by Watford. Do you think they'll be okay?
I do think they'll be okay. Rennie has done a great job over the last number of years, because they seem to lose every player they have when it comes to the end of the season, and he doesn't know whether he's coming or going with Lee Power and stuff. So I think he's done a fabulous job. He seems to just get players in before the deadline closes and stuff. So he's put together a reasonable squad at this moment in time. I don't think they're going to set the world alight, but I think they'll be okay.
Okay. Well, setting the pace, of course, Paul, you were there. 5 wins out of 5 for Shamrock Rovers. I wouldn't quite say a 5-goal thriller, but you were there on Saturday night. Sligo Rovers losing by 3-2. Did you enjoy your evening in Sligo?
It was a strange type of game, Adrian. And I think Stephen Bradley would be delighted with the result. It was the only ground that he had actually been to that he hadn't won at. So he'd be delighted with the result, and he'd be delighted to get that, I guess, voodoo off their back. But the performance probably wasn't what he would have wanted. They definitely made hard work of it, because for the first 40 minutes Sligo hardly laid a glove on them, and I mean that in the extent that there was no aggression to actually engage the Shamrock Rovers back four midfield. It was almost like walking pace. But they got themselves back into the game through a penalty, and then you thought that they might come out second half and really go at Shamrock Rovers, but didn't really happen. And the strength and depth in Shamrock Rovers' squad is just told again, because Dylan Watts and Gary O'Neill came on, changed the game, and Dylan set up both goals. That just shows the resource they have at their strength. The one thing I would say in Shamrock Rovers is Aaron Green started up top with Roy Gaffney. I'd be very, very surprised if we see that happening again, because they didn't have the same sort of rhythm, particularly in the middle of the pitch. And they looked a little lost at times, I thought. When they brought Dylan on and they had that more of an overload in centre midfield, they looked more back to themselves. And that's something that I wouldn't expect to see too often, because I thought they lost an element of Jack Byrne in particular playing that formation.
I think Gaffney has been a very good signing for them. When he came on against Dundalk, I thought he changed the whole game. Like, they didn't seem to be going anywhere. When Dundalk got the lead to 2-1, they brought on him immediately. And I just thought with his energy and his noose around the box and stuff, he was very, very good. And I thought he changed the whole game and gave the whole ground a lift, actually. I thought he was very good.
Yeah, 100%. And he actually came on and played with Green. And I have no problem with that when you're chasing the game to throw on the two front men. But I think starting against the likes of Sligo and maybe some of the teams in the lower half of the table, I thought they didn't look at their usual self. And the pitch wasn't great, but I would have expected more. But 3 points, it's 5 from 5. There's confidence, there's momentum behind that team.
Well, that's going to be my miss of the week, seeing as you brought it up. The pitch at the Showgrounds, but the pitch at Dalymount as well was pretty terrible on Friday night. And Pat Fenlon, on his commentary, referenced it a few times. And you were at it, Harry.
I was at it, yeah. The pitch was awful, and it certainly wasn't conducive to good football. Mind you, they didn't try to get it down and play either. I mean, the amount of balls that went from a centre-half position to the opposition goalkeeper, it happened loads of times, just bypassing the midfield. And the likes of Bucco and Livingston in the middle of the pitch for balls, the ball was just going over the head. And they're good players, they can play a little bit, but the football on show there wasn't very good. Now, it got a little bit better in the second half after Bowles got the 2 goals. They scored quite early in the second half and played a little bit, but Shell sort of threw in the towel then when the second goal went in.
I guess, to be fair, I'm saying that, but it is the time of year, isn't it, Anthony, when
it
the
is,
pitches are difficult, albeit Talla Stadium is in superb condition.
Yeah, well, it was similar in the Dublin Derby, wasn't it, in the first game of the season, although in fairness Rovers still were capable of, or they at least tried to play. And, you know, referencing Talla Stadium was a carpet. I was at the Dundalk Rovers game a couple of weeks ago, and was as we all know, it was a fantastic game of football from two excellent sides who were capable of doing that. But I suppose maybe like the atmosphere of the Bowles Shells' game as well might have lent itself to a bit of it was a bit frantic because, you know, it would have been a big atmosphere, passionate atmosphere, and it's a derby and nobody wants to make a mistake as well, you know. But as you say, Adrian, it's the time of the year and the weather we've got this year particularly seems to get worse every season. You know, it's been storm after storm, a lot of rain, pitches cutting up, and it is difficult.
Well, Bowes won the match, beating Shells by 2-0. Bowes really didn't show up in the first half, but a strong second half showing from Keith Long's side. We'll hear from both managers right now in a moment, Ian Morris of Shelburne, but first, Bohemians boss Keith Long.
You know, we weren't happy with our first half display. Second half, we come out of the traps a little bit more. We play on the front foot. Our distribution from our goalkeeper was a lot quicker. We got Danny Grant and Chris Twardock into the game. Danny Mandrew came alive. Andre Wright got a great goal from across. Danny Grant, good header back across from Chris Twardock. And Andre takes his goal really well. And then we follow that up with a second goal. Danny Mandrew, it's a, you know, great bit of clever play, invention, you know. So he's... And we probably could have got another goal or two potentially, but you know, first half really, really disappointing performance. You know, we rely upon the supporters to get behind the team to help us, and we never gave them a chance to get behind us in the first half.
In particularly after your first half display, that must be an especially disappointing result.
Yeah, it's a bit of one to take, but look, you can't give away poor goals and not take chances, and that's the name of the game. I thought we were unlucky not to go in at half-time leading. Come out in the second half, Dobbsy's had a good chance to put us 1-0 up again, don't take it, and then we just give away two sloppy goals, which then flips the game. So you can't go down one end and not take your chances and give away silly goals at the other end.
Harry, what about Shelburne? They've had a decent start, a newly promoted side. What have you made of them so far?
Yeah, they're going well enough. They do look to hit the two boys early and play off them, and I don't see them changing. They're an aggressive type of team. They've plenty of experience in there. They'd be similar to Waterford. I think they'd be okay. They'd be middle to bottom end, I think. But they've started reasonably well.
Yeah. James, what were your impressions of Denimont Park?
Denimont Park itself, pitch and bits that we already mentioned, because the storms have come in and wrecked it. My main impression, and it's something if I was Ian Morris I'd be quite worried about already, is that every goal they seem to have conceded this season so far, against Dundalk as well, was a set piece. Balls across the box, their defence aren't dealing with.
Yeah, the fullbacks were terrible.
They're not dealing with them at all. When the ball goes in behind them, they stay static.
Yeah.
Which then gives players a chance to run onto it from behind them or off their shoulder or anything like that.
Yeah.
And both goals the other night were the exact same. They were very, very static.
Yeah. They had a good result against Pats the previous week. Yeah. But I was surprised you took out Luke Bourne then out of the centre back position, you know, for the Bowles game. So
yeah, I think, I don't know whether you look at these, I don't know, as a manager, do you look at it, it's a Dublin derby. The atmosphere around the ground is going to be absolutely mental. The pitch won't be great.
Yeah.
Do you stick with what you have, or do you put a more mature player in there, or how do you do it? I don't know what you do for these types of games, but I don't know whether Luke could have done anything about the balls into the box, because it was, as you said, it was the two fullbacks.
It was the two fullbacks that were done for both.
Like Mandrew's ball coming back in as well. I'm not 100% sure if the ball is over the line before the header is had, by the way. But the fact that the two defenders just watched as that went on is not good. And I think that's something that if I was Ian Morris, I'd be looking at and I'd be trying to rectify straight away. Because if you're going to give goals away like that, a lot of goals, a lot of clubs put a lot of emphasis on their set pieces. And if you're not defending them and you're giving away goals, you're just chasing games all year, and you can't afford to do that.
Paul, I think most people are in general agreement that it's Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers going head-to-head. Dundalk with a very good response on Friday night, winning 4-0 at Finn Harps after the disappointment of Tallaght Stadium a week before. I'm sure Vinnie Perth and John Gill were absolutely delighted with the way they bounced back.
Absolutely, and Finn Harps has proven to be a very tricky place to go in recent times. They've conceded very few goals up there, and they've taken a lot of points, and their home form is basically what kept them up at the tail end of last season. So off the back of a defeat, it was probably a fixture that you would maybe want to avoid, but to come out 4-0 winners, it's I guess been a trademark of Dundalk in the last couple of years. When they've had a bad result, they've gone on a run. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something similar again. I thought Pat Hooban was excellent against Shamrock Rovers out in Tallaght. He's already got 5 goals this season. The main men seem to be playing quite well. Good for Duffy to get on the scoreline again. Good for the team that they kept a clean sheet. So,
And Greg Sloggett getting his
Greg Sloggett, yeah, Greg Sloggett chipping in. So it'll be interesting to see where they are come the end of the first round of fixtures. I'd be surprised if they were to drop too many more points. Likes of McElhenney still to come back in, I think they need, because I thought out in Tallaght when they had Sloggett, Flores and Shields, I just thought they were all very similar. And it looked as if they were really missing the likes of a Jamie McGrath and a Robbie Benson. So I think McElhenney coming back in could really dig them out in that department. But I don't think I'd ever question Dundalk and their attitude, their mentality and their, I guess, hunger to win. I'd be surprised now if they were to drop too many more points, because I think they've just got so much quality within their squad.
And that's the difficulty, isn't it, Harry, for Shamrock Rovers? And for both clubs, really, the margins are so fine. There's very little room for slippage.
Yeah, so fine. If you go back to that Dundalk Rovers game, if you think about the goals that Rovers got in the end, it was very unlike Shieldsy to be giving away a couple of goals. I mean, he lost his man, or he lost Lopez for the header, and Jack Bourne done him then on the edge of the box for the winning goal. Very unlike him. And as you say, like, when he was off it, Rovers certainly punished him. So it was a good win for Rovers in the end.
Yeah. Okay, St. Pat's, did you want to get in there?
Just looking back at the points, if you look at the points, you're talking about fine margins and stuff like that. I think after five games last season, I think Rovers were 10 points and,
that's right,
and Dundalk were 9. So they've both increased their point average already in the first five games of the season. So we could be on for a very high point at first and second. So we'll be those fine margins. When we hit Europe, I'd say, as we do every year when European games come into it, that's where teams can win and lose leagues. Personally, I feel that if you let that gap happen at that stage of the season, it's very hard to get back. But it's about grinding out results, and that 4-0 win for Dundalk wasn't really ground out. It was a couple of lucky bits fell to them and they put them away, but other clubs wouldn't put them away. And as you're right, Pat Hogan seems to be really, really at it straight off the bat.
I think they were 3-0 up at half time. Certainly would have settled them
2 up at half time.
Was it 2? And, 3 after 50 minutes or something. Yeah,
and it was good to see, as you said, Patrick McElhenney got back on the pitch as well. So,
but then again, they scored after 2 or 3 minutes. Hogan scored after 2. That would have really settled them. And it'd be the ideal thing to do going up there, just quieting down the whole place.
Okay, well, as mentioned, St. Pat's 1-0 winners over Cork City. A tight enough game, not one to savour for too long, I would imagine. Certainly the general consensus after that game was it was a night to forget. But all importantly for St. Pat's, they bagged the points. Billy King with the only goal. Pat's beating Cork City by a goal to nil. Neil found the Cork boss in a moment. But first, the St. Pat's boss, Stephen O'Donnell.
When you have such a newly built squad put together, it's always going to take a bit of time. You know, I thought the first three games we sort of dominated the ball possession wise, and that tonight probably something similar. So, you know, it's tricky when teams sit in behind the ball, as I said, especially on surfaces that are not sort of inducive to playing a quick, sharp one touch. But tonight was just all about getting a result. The lads' confidence will be up a bit. So we're 6 from 12. Look, it was sort of a deal breaker tonight, in the sense it was either going to be a poor, very poor start, or not a bad start that we can build on. So thankfully we've got the latter, and we're looking forward to a busy week now next week.
I thought it was a pretty close game in the first half, and we knew we would have to weather a bit of a storm coming out in the second half, and we didn't manage to do it. They scored a well taken goal, and then had a bit of pressure. They hit the bar as well, but then I thought as the game wore on, I thought we looked most likely to score at the end, and unfortunately we didn't.
Paul, Stephen O'Donnell there saying that that game was a bit of a deal breaker, I guess as well you could say a sort of season definer, in the sense of had they lost it, they were, you know, dropping into the bottom half. Now as it stands, they're in fourth position. It's still very early, of course, but it was an important win for Stephen O'Donnell and for St. Pat's.
Really important, and they actually head to Dundalk this Friday, so not a game that you'd be hoping to get 3 points from. I liken the Stephen O'Donnell Pat's project to when Stephen Bradley first went in at Shamrock Rovers. And if you think back, there was a lot of maybe poor results and poor performances, and it just takes time, and that's what he needs. He needs time. It has to be viewed as a long-term sort of project. He's brought in quite a few young players, and he's probably trying to change the culture within the club. So a really important win. They're still struggling to create chances and score goals, and that will be the problem for them right throughout this season. They seem to be owning a lot of the ball and having a lot of possession, but what's the point in having possession if you're not going to create chances? So actually the goal they scored was a really well worked T team goal, and you can kind of see the print that he's trying to put on the team in regards to playing through the thirds. So that will give them confidence. You know, you look to the likes of Billy King and even the likes of Robbie Benson and Lee Desmond, they're going to be huge and they're going to be vital for them going forward this season. But a really important win, and on the flip side, a really, really worrying result again for Cork City.
Okay, we'll come on to that. Harry, you were obviously at St. Pat's last year before departing the scene. How do you look back on it all now?
Couple of regrets, actually. I felt that the lads that I'd signed, the senior players that I'd signed, hadn't done it for me. No names mentioned. I was really disappointed because I really felt, and there was a lot of people talking about Pats prior to the season starting, that we had made a couple of good signings. The Brandon Melias, the Foresters, the Rhys McCabe, Mikey Drennan, all these sort of fellas. And they had been around the league a fair while and they were recognised as good players. In the end, I probably didn't have the shape of the team proper. I liked to play as I did in the Bray Wand when I was with Bray, with wide people and stuff. So when I got there, Brandon was injured at the start and Dean Clark was injured as well. So I ended up trying to play 3-5-2, which the plan going into it wasn't to do that. But I have a few regrets, really. I didn't leave it too badly in the sense that we were only 3 points off 30. And I have a regret in the sense that I didn't see out the season because...
Yeah, you were on the podcast last year as well, maybe 6 or 7 weeks after you had departed.
Yeah.
And it was with John Kenny.
Yeah.
And I do recall you said that maybe you were a bit hasty with your decision.
I was a little bit hasty. Oh, yeah. We had obviously gotten beaten by UCD in the cup and they had been tanked by Bowes, I think it was the previous week, 10 or something. And we had got knocked out of the cup and I took a fair amount of stick and... I just said to myself, do I need this type of thing? But I should have hung in there because it was only 6 or 7 weeks. We'd still to play Derry and Bowes for that sort of European spot. And the fixtures leading into the end of the season, they weren't too bad fixtures, you know.
But anyway. At the time then that you decided to pack it in, and obviously, you know, you spoke to the club and the club's owners and Mr. Keller and everybody involved. At that stage, were you entirely fed up with the situation or what was your attitude then?
Funny enough, Adrian, we had won the 3 previous games, which is hard to do in this league, you know. We had beaten Cork and I can't remember who else we had beaten, but we had on the back of a little run, and then the UCD thing happened and I just got out then, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
And Paul's point in relation to Stephen O'Donnell, as somebody who's been in there, is patience now the requirement of fans of St. Pat's?
Yeah, I think so. There's a huge influx of new players like I did myself, and that does definitely take time to gel and put his messages across, his philosophy across, that type of thing. And it does take time. And as Paul was saying there, he seems to be having that little Achilles heel of not scoring goals again. And I certainly had that last year. But I think he'll get there. He's a knowledgeable fella. He knows the game inside out. He knows the league really well. He's had a tutor in Stephen Kenny over the last number of years. And funny enough, when I got the job first up at Pats, I asked him to come on board to give us a help out. So, you know, it's gas the way things work. He's now in charge there. So,
And would you be keen to get back involved with League
of Ireland
football?
I think I would, yeah. At the time, you'd say, you know, it's too much and it's too much hassle and... Not that I'm an outfit, but I didn't need that stick at the time. But I love the football, I love the league, and I've been going to games ever since. I think I'd like to have a crack at it again, yeah.
And is it coaching or management or a combination of both? What are your thoughts?
I think managing now at this stage. I did a stint with Liam Buckley and stuff, coaching, and Kuki at the time, Mick Cook at the time, coaching. Then I got the manager's job at Bray and did well at that. So I think I prefer the managing, yeah.
Paul, you mentioned Cork and you're worried for them. It looks like a real battle for Neil Fenn, doesn't it?
It does, and only they got 3 points against Finn Harps at home. You'd be really scratching your head and thinking, where's the season going? I just thought there was an influx of players that you'd never really heard about from academy teams in the UK very close to when the window was shutting, and that somewhat smelt of desperation to me and panic to get bodies on board and just try fill up the numbers and see what they could do from there. And the results and the performances have tended to suggest that's what it was, because they're leaking goals and they're not picking up many points. So how they're going to graft out results, I'm not really too sure. And with the likes of Finn Harps strengthening, who you might have expected to struggle, it looks as if they're definitely going to be down around the bottom of the league.
It's interesting with that you're saying about the players coming in that late. It's kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it, really? Because you look at Alan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Alan Reynolds brought three players in the day before the season kicked off. You had to tell them who the other players were on the bus on the way to the first game of the season. And they have seemed to work. They've picked up points, but in Cork, it just hasn't worked. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's the style of play they're trying to play, or
Alan has a bit of know-how with sort of players in the UK and good contacts and all the rest. So he knows that sort of bottom end, that second division and first division in the UK, and certainly the Scottish League. So he'd have a fair idea of what's going on in there with players and stuff. But I agree with Paul that the Cork thing was a let's get two or three in, you know, before the window shuts and see how they go type of thing. I'd say Rennie was talking to these lads over the last number of months prior to getting them, you know.
Well, you know, Brian Murphy, you know what you're getting anyway. When the goalkeeper is one of them, you know exactly what you're getting out of that, which has helped and saved many, many points so far. But again, like, some of the guys, I don't think they think what level they're coming to play at.
But how would you know if I was an English player playing academy football in the UK, how would I have any sort of understanding what level League of Ireland is at? Because it's not something that's spoken about, it's not games that are watched, and you're foreign, you're completely foreign to what's going on. And I can tell you, having played 23s football and reserve team football over in the UK, it's so different, because it's all about playing out from the back, and it's almost football out of a manual.
It's development, isn't it? And then you come
and you play in the league here, and you're playing against people who have 200, 300, 400 league appearances under their belt, and they know how to graft and grind out results. Yeah. It's like a different game almost.
Yeah. And we're talking about the surfaces and teams like Shells and Finn Harps, they're going to be very combative. It is actually, they'll almost play a different sport. There's no, you know, it's like, let's make it as difficult as possible for the opposition. It must be a bit of a culture shock. But it's funny that, you know, when you think Neil Fenn came in when he did last season, that kind of seemed like it was to give him as much of a chance as possible to prepare for this season. So the point you're making that they brought in these guys quite late in the day, you'd wonder what the thinking was behind that.
Yeah, you know? I'm not sure Fenny knew quite exactly what he was getting himself into. You know, Garrod Morris is the only one I can think of off the top of my head that's still there.
Yeah.
And to go through that much change, like we've seen, Harry would be able to say better than I have, but like huge numbers coming into squads and the time it takes to embed your philosophy and get people up to scratch with how you want to play. When you're turning over that amount of players and you've got a set of fans who are used to winning, to now being stuck down around the bottom of the league, it's a serious, serious transition.
And you're only getting them prior to the season starting, so you don't have much time to work with them or whatever, you know, so it's very, very difficult.
Okay, we'll see what happens there. We're recording this on a Monday afternoon, and, you know, we live in very troubling times, but the RTÉ website has a story, Slovakia ready to play Ireland game behind closed doors. This has been mooted now, Anthony. One of your colleagues has just put this up. In an update issued on Monday afternoon, the Slovakian football governing body said they will cooperate with all guidelines for coronavirus prevention for the game in Bratislava, and that includes possibly playing the game behind closed doors.
Yeah, very real possibility now, Adrian. I mean, you can see what's happened with the Six Nations in Serie A. There's about 2,200 Irish fans have bought tickets for this game, but there was about 4,500 applications, so it expected a lot more will travel, and that they may still travel even if the game's called off, but we just have to wait and see what happens. You'd have to say at this point that it looks like that game is going to be behind closed doors.
It was a bit mental last night. I actually watched the Juve game last night, and it was the most surreal game of football I think I've watched in a long, long time. And not just the football itself in an empty stadium, but it's the pre-match before it, the players coming out of the bus to see Ronaldo high-fiving people who aren't there, as he normally would do with the ball boys or the ball girls as he's walking down the tunnel. The players beforehand in the tunnel, you can hear the full conversation between them, what they're talking about. And they even did, which I found quite bizarre, they even did the walkthrough. Like the handshake walkthrough, they actually did that before the match.
All nodding at each other.
Well, just nodding at each other and looking at each other. Shaking hands. Which is, of course, having come out from the FEI today, is what we're going to see on Friday night.
But back to the Slovakia game. Is that good or bad news? I know it's terrible for the travelling fans, but Slovakia are obviously hoping to have home advantage and having the crowd behind them.
Yeah.
How do you view it as from an Irish standpoint.
I think it's a good thing in a football sense, really, that they're playing away
from an Irish home, football sense.
Yeah, Irish football sense.
Okay, we'll have to see what happens there. Your hit of the week, Anthony?
Well, my hit of the week was the performance of the Ireland women's team against Greece. I thought they were excellent. One of the most positive things about it was that they learned from the draw in Athens, you know, where they retreated in the second half, and Vera Powell was quite. She was pretty critical about of the team after that draw. She said, "Well, we were asking for they retreat to the they were camped inside their own box, in the latter stages of that game, and they got pinged for a late leveller, but they brought in the likes of Anya O'Gorman, Little John, Niamh Fatty just screened the back four, you know, the deep line midfield role. Rhianna Jarrett now playing full time with Brighton, and she was excellent, just worked the chance. But they were a lot more steely." You know, they saw the game out when they were 1-0 up with 15 minutes to go. You didn't think, they didn't look nervous. They didn't, you know, they had control of the game, which bodes really well. You know, they're looking good, and massive game for them on Wednesday against Montenegro.
Which is live on RT2 television, 3 o'clock kickoff, coverage from 2:30. It is a big game, as you say. They made hard work of beating Montenegro at the latter end of last year, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, Germany bet them 10-0, I think, and then they bet Ukraine 8-0, and Ireland 2-0 against Montenegro and then 3-2 against Ukraine. So Germany are going to win the group. They're just on a different level. But you'd hope now that this Ireland are a little more polished, a little more confident, and they have boosted the squad with players that come back from injury. Anya Gorman is a good addition as well. The experience that she brings, she's actually been brought into play to cover full back, but she didn't put a foot wrong the other night. So it's a massive game for them. Maintain the momentum, that's what it's all about in these qualification campaigns, and they'll certainly be thinking at least the playoffs. But I think the three best runners up get automatic qualification, yeah, as well. So that's a possibility too if they can get enough points. But certainly
we're missing a few players, weren't they, as well?
Yeah, well they have a healthy squad, you know.
Yeah. I was with the women's under 17s, and we got to the World Cup with Noel King out in Trinidad, and there's four or five of them girls that are now in the senior squad, so it was good progression for them. You'd like to say Claire Shine, Katie McCabe, Denise, there's lots of players that have progressed through.
There's great to see Emily Whelan dropped back to the under 19s. She's a very good player. Tyra Toland, there's good depth there, you know, and there's a real confidence about them at the moment. I think if you just look at, there seems like a good vibe around that squad.
Yeah, good atmosphere around them all, right?
One or two of them Conley got injured with her shoulder injury, wasn't it, just before, and obviously Megan's out had an operation during the week as well. So there's a couple of players, as you said, are injured as well.
Yeah,
really, really good players if they come back in. But I think it's all important now that we qualify. If we get a qualification, this set of qualifiers, it'll do the Irish women's game absolutely. It'll go by leaps and bounds. Yeah, like you look at the crowds that are now going to matches, like that's a good sign as well. And the girls are really, they're interacting with the crowd. Their social media is absolutely brilliant, how they go about it.
Yeah.
The players themselves, their own social media, just showing how much they care about it and how much they pushed on. And it's about time that the Irish public got behind them and went with them on this journey.
You need to start with the league,
one,
though, as well. You know, the league hasn't been great.
Like,
you know?
The league kicks off this weekend, and it's going to be, there's going to be some good matches there, and there's going to be some players coming back as well, like Steph Roach coming back. That'll help boost the league here as well.
The match is actually on Saturday. Bowes against Athlone Town, Shells against Galway, Wexford Youths, the cup winners, against DLR Waves, and then on Sunday afternoon it's Cork City against the defending champions Piemont United. My hit of the week, I was going to go for Griffin's goal, but James had already bagged it, so I'm going to go for Cabin Teely making it 3 wins out of 3 at the top of the first division. Great start by Cabin Teely. They beat Shamrock Rovers 2 with a late goal, so 1-0 there. They were down to 10 players for more than 20 minutes. Shane Barnes scoring his third goal of the season, and Devo and Co seem to be doing it once again, Harry.
They're doing a brilliant job there, and they even lost a couple of players. Chew, the centre back, gone off to Drogheda. The big centre forward gone off to Longford. So, you know, Manley
scoring goals for fun last
year. They're doing fabulous, and long may it continue. They've done a great job. Yeah.
Drogheda 5-1 winners over UCD. Great response from Drogheda, having lost to Longford last week. There were something like 3-0 up after half an hour.
That's right,
It's a good result, but again, like, it's difficult for UCD dropping back down from the Premier from last year. A lot of their players are now at Shamrock Rovers, most of them anyway. Yeah. all their quality players are there, and it's quite difficult for But Drogheda needed to get a win. If the Tim Clancy lads want to push on this year and get out of that league, they've got to be winning games like that. And it was a great win for them.
Yeah, Longford's game against Bray Wanderers at Bishopsgate was postponed, a waterlogged pitch. No goals between Wexford and Galway, and Cove defeated Athlone Town by 3-2. Athlone were actually 2-0 down in that game, got it back to 2-2, but Ian Turner grabbed the winner for Cove, their first win of the season. So the First Division shaping up very nicely indeed. I mentioned at the outset, Harry, Hall of Famer with Shamrock Rovers. When you look back at those days in the 80s, because you were part of that famous 4-in-a-row side, and you won, what, 3 FAI Cups as well.
Yeah.
Some team.
Yeah, it was a great team. Yeah, we'd really go.
Just remind us of some of the names, apart from Pat Byrne.
I always say, people always ask me who was the best player I've ever played. I don't know, certainly Pat Byrne, he was a fabulous player. Really good. Peter Eccles and Mick Neville, self and Kevin Brady at full backs. John Cody went off to Chelsea, Liam O'Brien who went to Man U, and you had Mick Bourne and Larko up the top, or Alan Campbell and Buckley in the earlier days, so they were up the top as well. And then you had Paul Doolan on the right hand side, so really, really good team. And Dundalk got pretty close to doing what we did before, but I was glad really that they didn't do it. So yeah, we had a great team, and fabulous pitch out in Milltown as well.
Yeah, it was the days of Milltown, and what a lovely ground.
Oh, the ground was fantastic. Yeah. Really, really good. And the pitch in particular, like, it was Johnny Giles really, when he came back first from Vancouver Whitecaps, insisted on the pitch being good, because Giles, he liked to play good football, as you know. And yeah, great days.
And you were there for that experiment, the John Giles one.
I was, I was part of that experiment, Tracy, as well, when the summer football, he brought players over to Vancouver Whitecaps to play in the American League, and came back then in the winter and played with Rovers. So I went over for the season, but that first 2 weeks I broke my leg and I never got to play over there. But brilliant experience. These lads are too young to remember the...
Well, except for James. Curry was in the cot, I'd say.
Yeah.
Not even.
Joyce, you had a lot of the Leeds, ex-Leeds lads playing, like Peter Lorimer and Terry Yorrit and all of these fellas, you know. But it was a great experience, really good.
Yeah. Do you recall those days, James?
I think I've only been in Milltown once. I think I must have been quite young. I can kind of measure. It looks nice with houses on it now, but
James.
They gave me one of them houses, actually.
See, there's the controversy you never hear, right? Harry lives there now. It's brilliant.
No, I'm only joking.
But I more remember the Ray Tracy era in the RDS.
Yeah.
That was...
They won a league, yeah.
Yeah, that was quite good. I really liked going to the RDS. RDS was a nice ground to go and
great crowds as well.
Yeah.
Wonderful crowds. But they were always good games going to watch that.
Yeah, and I think the first game there was 30,000 or so, 30,000, yeah.
That's what I remember. Pretty good.
Did you play in the last game at the old Milltown against Sligo Rovers?
I did, yeah.
I was there.
Were you?
It was my one and only time at Milltown, was that day.
Really?
It was a cup semi-final. Was it a cup semi-final or a league game? Anyway, it was my
it
first
was time. The semis. We drew, and then we beat them in the replay.
Well, I was at that one as well. I didn't want to mention I was at the replay. But we all travelled up, and then there was an arrangement, because the Sligo Rovers supporters knew that the Shamrock Rovers fans were going to go out onto the pitch at half-time. So a lot of the Sligo Rovers fans went over
the protest
to
banners.
Join the protest.
Yeah. I was lucky to get the game going, I think, in the second half as well, but... I think we were lucky that day to get the draw, and then
I think you were.
We beat them well enough then in Sligo, so yeah, it was good days. Yeah,
well, it was a great show of solidarity that day, and there's one or two Shamrock Rovers fans that still have a soft spot for Sligo Rovers because of that.
Because
of the fans that day.
Yeah.
Anthony, this is all just the midst of time.
Above his head.
Yeah.
You as well, Paul.
And just on that Shamrock Rovers team and Jim McLaughlin. To play under Jim McLaughlin, because obviously he had success with Derry City as well. What was he like as a manager?
Oh, that's a good question, because I was, myself and Peter Eccles came from the Johnny Giles era, the Dunphy and Tracy and all of them, as you mentioned earlier. And I struggled to get into the team early on, I think, because he had brought a total new team in and picked all the best players in the league. And he brought back Anto Whelan from Man United, so, and he obviously played right back and I played right back, so... He was favouring him in that first season. So from that, I never really got on with him, to be quite honest with you. No, I didn't, no. No, fabulous manager and all the rest, but I didn't get on with him because, I don't know whether it was because I came from that Johnny Giles time. But I ended up forcing my way into the team, and as you say, getting all them league winners medals and cup winning medals. But he's a good man manager, and Noel King did all the training. He was very, very good as well. Yeah, it's good.
Well, it's good that you're honest about it, because a lot of guys, when asked that kind of question, would say, oh, he was a great manager. But you're actually saying, well, I didn't get on with him.
No, well, he was obviously a great manager because of the three doubles and the four in a row and all that sort of. Well, Dermot McKeely actually won one of the doubles. So he went on up to Derry, McLaughlin did after that.
So did half the team.
And had more success. Well, that's another, I can't say what he did on me going up there. But anyway. it was great squad of players. McLaughlin was good, and Kinger was even better. Kinger was very, very good at the coaching and stuff.
For fear of sound like James McMahon, but there's only one player that's played a league game in Milltown and a league game in Tallaght Stadium.
Whoa.
There you go.
What was that?
Say it again. Yeah.
One player has played a league game in Milltown and Tallaght Stadium.
Is this a trick one now?
Yeah, I know who that is. Robbie Horgan, is it?
Robbie Horgan.
Yeah.
Robbie Horgan.
Yeah.
He was, yeah. He put himself on for Sporting Fingal 5 minutes left in the game or something like that. He went down in goal.
That's right.
James, we didn't get your miss of the week. Are we going back to the RSC for that?
I don't know. We mentioned how poor Derry were already. I think one of my misses of the season is, how can I say that? It's a complete own goal on behalf of the FEI once again. In stopping people doing radio commentary on League of Ireland games. It really, really bugs me. This week in particular, the two guys at St. Pat's have been told that they're no longer allowed to do commentary, internet commentary that they were doing as a service to St. Pat's fans around the world who are listening in to them. They were no harm to anybody. They were doing a very, very good job. I feel it's a case of, if there's nobody willing to do the service, and there's nobody, I know the FEI are looking for people to pay for rights for this service, but if there's nobody willing to do the service, don't stop the people who are willing to do it for free.
But, and I would put this to you, haven't the FEI got a responsibility to look after their rights? You know, what is essentially, I mean, it's the people's game, but it is their property when it comes to rights.
And I have no problem with that whatsoever. If there is a company who are willing to go to St. Pat's and pay for rights to do it, I understand that the other guys can't do it. But if there's nobody there to do that in the first place, they're not a competition against anybody.
But you can't really have everybody going off doing, you know, commentaries online, filming matches, putting them
out. Well, I'm not saying filming matches.
Yeah, but you're saying broadcast matches.
We're getting into legalities here.
Yeah, talking about internet commentary where nobody is willing to do that service for anybody.
I understand what you're saying, but you can equally understand, I'm sure, Paul, you can equally understand the FBI, that they've got their own portfolio when it comes to TV broadcasters and radio broadcasters and online companies. They can't be seen to let anybody just do anything they want.
That's true. They have to look after their product. As part of the participation agreement, it's up to them to go into commercial dealings on behalf of the clubs and behalf of what they see is best for the league. But if there's nobody there who are going to do it, until you get someone to go there, okay, if you do get somebody, if you're able to fill that position with a company who's willing to pay to broadcast, fair and well, then the other people who aren't paying it don't do it. But if nobody is willing to do it in the first place, or nobody's willing to pay for it in the first place, then why stop people who are doing it on a voluntary basis? They're not doing this on, we'll say, the likes of ourselves or News Talk or Today FM or anything like that. These guys are just doing it on the internet with maybe a couple of hundred people listening in.
Sure,
that's it.
Sure. Okay. Your miss of the week, Anthony?
My miss of the week was Troy Parrott's penalty miss. Not really the penalty miss, actually. I just felt sorry for him after that game. He came on. There was a stark contrast. This was Spurs' FA Cup game against Norwich. And another young Irish player, Adam Ida, came on for for Norwich. And played on the left wing throughout extra time and the last few minutes of the 90, and he scored his penalty. Troy Parrott missed his penalty, but it was how their managers sort of treated them and have treated them in the last few months. Adam Ida played against Manchester United in the Premier League for Norwich, and he literally didn't get a kick. They took him out of the team. There was no big hoo-ha about it. They just took him out of the team for maybe a month, and they've slowly started to give him minutes again. Everything's very positive around him. They understand he's a raw young player. I just think that Troy Parrott's been unfortunate in that he had an excellent manager in Pochettino in terms of nurturing talent and and giving young players a chance. And Jose Mourinho is a guy who doesn't really look like he fully trusts young players generally. And, you know, the comments after the game that he made about Parrott, how Parrott had played in extra time, I just thought it was really unfair. I actually didn't think he did anything wrong, really. You know, he's a kid, he's still learning his trade, and he needs someone to get an arm around the shoulder and just maybe just encourage him a little more. And it's backed up by, compounded by Mick McCarthy also being sort of negative about him, just saying there's no chance he's going to play against Slovakia. Forget it. You know, he got 2 minutes against Wolves. I could have played against Wolves. You know, that type of thing. Like, I just think it's a little unnecessarily overly negative about the young. I get that they're trying to protect them and they're trying to cool down the hype, but I just feel there's maybe a better way to do that than that's been happening the last few weeks.
Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed as well, in a sense that Mourinho was airing it everywhere about Troy Parrott, and I know there was a few fans calling for him to be playing and all the rest, but I didn't think Mourinho had to go sort of public with it. That's a sort of an in-house thing, and directing the young lad in whatever way he wants to go. But you're right about Pochettino. He sort of takes care of people and keeps it all in-house and nothing gets out. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, it was very harsh on Parra. Really, really good player now. He's only gone 18 and he's a big future ahead of him, but it was poor form on Mourinho's part, I thought.
Paul, as somebody who's been in England, it's a difficult situation he's in now, is it?
Yeah.
Or did he just have to bide his time?
Listen, I struggled at times off the pitch when I was in the UK, and it's only probably when I reflect now that I see the link, now that I'm a bit older, the link between how you live your life as a professional and how that ties into your performances on the pitch. And I think Troy, as a young lad, the game can pass you by very quickly, and I don't think that's going to happen with Troy, but you have a certain responsibility to live your life professionally. And I think that's probably the question mark that maybe dangles above his head, not his professionalism, but maybe just the whole package. Nice. His ability as a player is never going to be in question. I don't think anybody's going to question that. He has all the tools to make it at the very, very top. But the ones who stay at the top for the longest period of time, you look at Harry Kane, he's just a picture of professionalism. And I think, you know, we've read stories about Troy and what has gone on off the pitch. And I just think if you are to extract every bit of potential, you have to do things right off the pitch. And that would be my only question about Troy.
It's a different life as well, though. He's in London, for you, you're up in Sheffield. It's two cities, but one's completely different to the other. There's a lot more temptation in London, would you say, or do you think that you just have to shut that completely out?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the same sort of decisions, though, James. Like, you have a decision of how professional you want to be. You have a decision of what food you eat, how much rest you get, whether you go out on the weekends or you go out midweek, how you spend your money. Like, there's one part of football and it's looking like a footballer, and then there's a second side of actually being a footballer. And I'm not accusing Troy of anything like that. I've met him. He's an unbelievably intelligent young man, unbelievably down to earth. But there are certain question marks that I would still have. And I think if he is to go as far as everybody wants him to go, I think there's a bit of professionalism needed. And I think that's probably raised the hair on certain people's backs in Tottenham about the stories that have come out. And that doesn't bode well when you're talking about a team at the very top of English football and some of the stories that have been attached to Troy's name. It doesn't look good.
Yeah, difficult situation for a young fella. As you said, he's
only gone 18.
Just turned 18. Yeah. Very, very difficult for him. But I think it's stuff you have to learn from, don't you?
You do.
And not
you have every to learn footballer quickly from is perfect, like, you know what I mean?
They
have to be managed
perfect,
differently. Yeah. Of
course, and I made huge amounts of mistakes when I was, you know, not in the team. And when you're not playing, it's very, very challenging. But at the same time, that's when you really have to knuckle down. And if Troy was to benefit from a loan move and get 20-30 games, that would be unbelievable. But while you're stuck at Tottenham and while you're not playing, you have to be as professional and you have to train yourself as best as you can for when that opportunity
comes. And Paul, when you say you made lots of mistakes, what kind of mistakes are you talking about? Or can you say on air?
Yeah. I know, like, when
was it discipline? Was it self-discipline? Or
A bit of that. When I went over, things happened very quickly for me and I got into the team probably quicker than I ever expected. And then one or two things didn't go my way and I felt my confidence started to lack. My self-esteem started to struggle. My mental health, not to say that I was depressed, But I was really struggling because there was a lack of communication probably from the manager down to me, and I started thinking that I wasn't in his plans and probably didn't train hard enough when I wasn't in the team, and realised that, okay, maybe there are certain weaknesses that I need to work on in regards to my fitness, in regards to my strength and my ability to last the 90 minutes that I could have worked on in the background while not in the team. I think when you're not in the team, it's very easy to become a victim and say that I'm not playing because of the manager or for certain situations. But you probably struggle to find a footballer who says they don't have regrets. And maybe one of my regrets was that I didn't get myself to a level of fitness that maybe I could have when I wasn't playing, and maybe those decisions I made when I went out on a Saturday night when I maybe should have just stayed in and knuckled down that bit harder. Just difficulties. It's very, very difficult, Adrian. You're very on your own over in the UK. You're away from your family,
and you're
away
young,
from your friends.
There's all those temptations to go out and join the lads.
Of course it is. And it's just difficult. It's very, very challenging. And what I want to see in the likes of a Troy Parrott is I don't want to see Troy make some of the tiny little mistakes that I made that maybe impacted my career. And my career isn't necessarily meaningful, but what I do want to do is try help people get to the next level and try educate, because I don't feel as if we educate our players enough in regards to what life is actually life like as a professional footballer. Now Troy has gone at 16, he's got a bit of that, but I still think there's more support we could put around our own to help them get to the next level.
So if you had one piece of advice to give him, what would it be? Apart from knuckle down, or is it simply a case of knuckle down?
I think it's stick to the core of what made you fall in love with the game. Don't be so engrossed in trying to look like a footballer and be like a footballer, and you know, social media, cars, watches. It's not important at the end of the day. Focus on your football, focus on your core friends, your family, training hard, and that is ultimately what brings success.
And I'd say that, just as you say there, Paul, I'm sure that's probably happening behind the scenes, that he has people saying that to him. I just don't see the benefit of someone like Jose Mourinho. Just, he feeds the frenzy. You know, you're thinking of a young lad, how would it affect you if you're picking up newspapers or you're on websites and these stories keep circulating from the first team manager? Like, surely you would just benefit more if it was behind closed doors, one-on-one, keep it away, you know, from the public domain.
You would expect a manager of Mourinho's experience to protect his players. Does it suggest that something's got under Mourinho's skin? I don't know. But of course, listen, he's only recently turned 18. You think the mistakes that we made as 18-year-olds. Yeah. The only problem is when you're in that Premier League bubble, everything gets amplified. It's all over papers, and you just have to live your life as best you can.
Okay. All right, listen, the clock has kind of caught up with us. Just a reminder of the fixtures this coming weekend in the Premier Division. It's Cork against Bowes, Derry against Sligo Rovers, Shells against Waterford, Dundalk against St Pat's, Shamrock Rovers against Finn Harps. In the First Division, Athlone against Wexford, Bray against Cove Ramblers, Galway take on Cabinteely. It's UCD against Longford Town, all those games on Friday night. And on Saturday, it's Shamrock Rovers 2 against Drogheda United at Tallaght Stadium. Kickoff is at 3 o'clock. You weren't at Italia 90, were you, Harry, by any chance? You didn't venture over Italia 90 or Euro 88 or any of that? The reason I
was Euro 88.
Boys in Green. It's on tonight on RT1 at 9:35. If you're listening to the podcast after 9:35 on Monday night, then it'll be available, I'm sure, on Catch Up. And there's also a second episode. But you're at Euro.
I was there for Stuttgart, the O'Leary goal as well. Romania, wasn't it? He scored against.
It was, of course.
I was behind that goal, actually. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was great times. Yeah.
Who do you think the highest get out of Inchicore?
Ring that bell. Ding, ding, yeah. Ding. Unfortunately, we're at 54 minutes now, so we have to wrap things up. I could have asked you about Italia 90 and Euro 88, not to be. Anyway, good luck with the future. And as you say, you're pretty keen to get back involved with football.
I am, yeah. I'm 6 months out now, and I have a bit of goo on me to get back in.
The appetite is there.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Great. Harry, many thanks for joining us. Paul,
pleasure.
Harry,
thank
Anthony
you.
Pine and James. As always, thank you very much. Until next week, bye-bye.